Hello. Welcome to this episode of Criminal Mischief, the Art and Science of Crime Fiction. I'm your host, D.P. Lyle. Today's show is titled Nasty Deadly Poisons. We crime writers love poisons. I mean, even those who write cozy type mysteries and thrillers like poisons. I mean, you know, arsenic and old lace, what more can you say? Arsenic, obviously, is the queen of poison, and people have used amphetamines and the opioids, narcotics, that kind of thing, for overdosing and, you know, killing people, of course, alcohol and stuff like that. The Mickey Finn, all those things. But today I want to talk about some more unusual poisons, some things that may or may not be easily obtained. But, you know, you're a writer, and you ought to be able to figure out how your bad guy gets a hold of the poison. Obviously, if you're writing a international spy versus spy, political, military, whatever type thriller, then your bad guy has access to a lot more stuff than if you're writing about a small town murder in the middle of Indiana. They wouldn't have the same access. So here we go. Let's start with cyanide. I mean, obviously this is common. It's easily available. It's used in jewelry making and metal plating and all that stuff. You can even order it online. It is odorless and tasteless and colorless white powder. It comes as either sodium cyanide or potassium cyanide. It kills quickly. It is highly deadly. The chances of saving someone who has been exposed to it is extremely remote. There are antidotes, there are drugs that can be given to block it, reverse it, etc. But boy, they have to be done right here, right now. And it's very, very difficult. Most people don't survive to get out the front door, much less to the emergency room. And it causes, it's a metabolic poison in that it jumps into the cells and it messes up with the energy production inside the cell so that the cell basically cannot utilize oxygen, and so it asphyxiates and dies. And so as the cells die, the body dies. So it's highly deadly, and only a tiny amount is needed. The problem is it also absorbs through the skin, and it can be inhaled. It doesn't have to be ingested, so the user has to be careful how he handles it and how he uses it. But literally, just a pinch in some food or a drink or something will do the trick. Or even, you know, lace a cigarette with it. There's a million ways to use it. And the victim will develop chest pain, shortness of breath, and drop dead. It looks just like a heart attack or a pulmonary embolus or something like that. And that may be what the death has caused. I mean, it's called in the beginning. And only when the medical examiner does his autopsy and he realizes, well, a heart attack didn't occur and a pulmonary embolus didn't occur. And the other clue is that the blood turns kind of a bright cherry red, so he may see that in the blood and in the internal organs and suspect cyanide. It also gives an almond smell, a bitter almond smell to the corpse. Now, what's interesting is whether someone can detect that or not is genetically determined. 50% can, 50% can't. So if your medical examiner can't, he may not even, and he doesn't notice the reddish tinge to everything, he may not suspect cyanide and may not look. As usual, there are links to all this on the show notes that'll be on my website and my blog and all that, and you can find all those there and go read more about each of these things we're going to talk about. Strychnine. Strychnine is a deadly poison. What's interesting about strychnine, obviously it was used for rodent and other animal control. It is a neurotoxin. It is it's a horrible way to die. But the snake-handling preachers in the South, and my book, Original Sin, my third Samantha Cody book, actually deals with these folks. They'll sip strychnine because they think they're protected from it by the Bible and that it adds to their health and it makes them better and stronger and all of that stuff. I guess it comes from what doesn't kill me makes me stronger. But it's obtainable. It's out there. You can get it, and your bad guy can get it and use it. And what does it do to the individual? As I said, it's a neurotoxin, so it makes all kinds of things happen within the body, particularly in the neurologic system. At first, they may just get agitated and confused and disoriented and restless and jumpy, and then they start getting muscle spasms and their muscles start jerking. And particularly, there's a thing called opisthotomus, where there's an arching of the back, and literally some of these people can die with only the back of their head and their heels on the ground, and you know, they're arched like a rainbow bridge. The jaw tightens and they get their mouth pulled back, and it looks like a death smile has been called that. And obviously this interferes with breathing, and they end up dying from asphyxia. And that's what causes the death. So it's like, you know, having a bag put over their head or putting in a room with no oxygen. Botulism. You know, in a Botox world, botulism's kind of gotten a softer name. But trust me, it is a deadly, deadly, deadly toxin. It also is a neurotoxin. It comes from the bacterium called Clostridium botulinum. It prevents the release of a neurotransmitter called acetylcholine. And basically this happens where the nerves and the muscles come together, what we call the neuromuscular junction, and it makes all the muscles relax. This is why when you get injections to lessen the wrinkles in your forehead, the muscles relax, and so you don't have the muscles, the forehead is flat. And you've seen people with this, and when they smile, nothing happens on their forehead. And they use it for other things. It's also used to treat migraines and some other pain syndromes. So it does have medical uses. But an overdose of botulinum can be just absolutely horrible. Again, it, as I said, is a neurotoxin. The muscles go flaccid. The person gets weak, disoriented, off balance, and the next thing you know, they're laying on the ground and they can't breathe. And once again, because all the muscles kind of quit working, they die from asphyxia. Another one that you can consider is nicotine. You know, nicotine's often overlooked, but it's becoming more in the news because of vaping. Vaping tends to have a lot more nicotine in it and supplies a lot more nicotine than smoking cigarettes or chewing Nicorette gum or even chewing tobacco. It just delivers a lot of nicotine, and that's the addictive quality. And of course they flavor them so the kids think that it's fun, but actually what it is, it's nicotine poisoning. And it makes them jittery and lack of focus, and you know, like they got ADHD. They're nervous, they're sweaty, their heart rate's up, their blood pressure's up, and this is all the effects of nicotine, which is deadly, 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 deadly. Now, what are the chances of nicotine poisoning happening, you know, by accident? It's pretty rare. You probably can't smoke enough cigarettes or chew enough tobacco. I guess if you swallow enough of it, you could, but good Lord, that would be hard to do. You could probably vape enough that you could get into trouble and kill yourself, because it does have effect on the cardiac rhythm, and you can have a cardiac arrest and die from this stuff. If your blood pressure goes up high enough, you can also have a stroke or something like that. So nicotine is not likely to happen by accident, but if you add nicotine to something, or if you get someone to ingest some nicotine, like take a pack of cigarettes and steep it in hot water for a while and then boil it down to where it's just a thick syrup and put a little bit of that in some food, that could be enough to kill. Absolutely, it could be enough to kill. The problem is that nicotine is corrosive. I mean, it irritates the mouth. The person would probably notice it. It may be too late. They may have already swallowed, but their mouth and throat would be burning. It also has a very, very, very bitter taste to it. Another one that might be a little harder to get, but you probably remember it, is ricin. It was the white powder that was mailed to several political people and people in Congress and presidents and everything else. It was mailed in envelopes, and, you know, they'd have a white powder dump out. It turned out it was probably baby powder, but it freaked everybody out, and they would empty a building because this stuff is very, very toxic. And, you know, it can get through your skin. You can breathe it. You can get it into your mouth, swallow it, and it's deadly. It comes from the castor bean, and the castor bean has to be manipulated. The toxin has to be removed from it and converted into a powder, and then it can be used. It also causes skin and eye irritation, and when it's ingested, it can cause vomiting and diarrhea, and even bloody diarrhea. You can have bleeding in the urine because it damages the kidneys. It can cause seizures. It can cause people to quit breathing, and it can cause people to fall over dead, or it can kill them more slowly. Sometimes it takes a while for this stuff to work that way. A famous case, and I have a link to this, is the George A. Markov case. And he was a Bulgarian that was outspoken against Russia and that. And the thing was is that the Bulgarian secret police killed him at the behest of the KGB. That's the way the story goes. And again, there's a link. You can read more about it. But what's curious about this is that he was walking one day and he felt something, you know, kind of hit him in the back of the leg. And he thought he'd bumped into something, and he saw a guy behind him who was picking up an umbrella, and the guy walked away. Well, then he started getting sick. And to make a long story short, when they examined the wound in his leg, they actually found a little microscopic ball with a cavity in it that ricin had been put in, and he had been stabbed in the back of the leg, and then that's what did him in. Treacherous, actually clever, but treacherous. So if that fits your story, there's no reason, why reinvent the wheel. You can use something like that. Let's talk about the nerve gases, sarin and VX, and there's a few others. These are really, really, really nasty. These are not easy to come by any stretch of the imagination. Would be in the terroristic chemical weapon category, but if you're writing about that level of conflict and that level of murder, and you're doing the global political terrorism novel, this stuff works well. I think that sarin was used in the attack in a Japanese subway and all that many years ago. It is highly deadly. You can't touch it. You can't breathe it. You know, certainly can't ingest it. It does not take much to kill you, and it can kill you in just a few minutes. And again, it's a nerve agent. It's a toxic, and it's an organophosphate compound that's synthetically made. It actually started as a pesticide. Sarin and VX and all those guys came as a pesticide, but it turned out it was so toxic that it could not be used because it was the tiniest little bit. So you're going to go out and spray your fields with this stuff? I don't think so. Your house is downwind from it. Your whole family's dead. It is highly, highly, highly deadly compound. And again, it causes paralysis and the cessation of breathing, and the individuals die really a horrible death from asphyxia. Polonium. You may remember this one. Polonium is in the same family with selenium and thallium and stuff like that. And look those up, because selenium comes from gun-bluing agents. Thallium is used in certain scans. We use it in cardiology all the time, or used to, not so much anymore. But it's used in certain scans in the hospital. And then that product's got to go out the door and as a waste. It can be stolen and recycled as a murder weapon, as it were. And, of course, gun-bluing agents can be bought over the counter in almost any gun shop, and they contain selenium. So selenium and thallium are very similar to polonium, but polonium is it's special in that it is highly radioactive, And so it has to be handled very carefully, and your bad guy better know how to handle radioactive isotopes, because if he doesn't, he's going to end up dead himself. But it works. Now, you might remember the case of Alexander Litvinenko. It's hard to pronounce these names. But he was a very smart, nice guy, and the Russian KGB or FSB, whatever they call it now, decided to get rid of him, and apparently he was given a dose of polonium, and then he died a horrible death. It was very disfigured, as the radiation syndrome that followed was just basically consumed him. It's treacherous. Again, it's hard to come by, so you won't be able to use that in just any story. It's got to be one that has international, political, military, and governmental connections, or you won't get that. Let's talk about Bradyfalcum. This is something that I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing it right, because it's very rare. It's interesting that one of the medicines that have been around for many, 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 many decades in medicine is Coumadin. You probably know someone who either is on Coumadin or took it in the past. It's the drug in my entire 50 years of medical career that I hated the most, because it is treacherous, it is difficult to manage, it requires frequent blood testing. It is just a difficult, difficult product to deal with. But it was the only game in town until the last few years, and now we've got better anticoagulants for things like pulmonary emboli, atrial fibrillation, and all that, that don't require all this testing, are much safer and much more effective, and they're just one pill one time a day, so they're much easier. But Coumadin is called bishydroxycoumarin. Interesting enough, that's what decon rat poisoning is. Now, the way it worked in rats is that they would ingest it, the rat poison put out for them, they would eat it, and it would interfere with their coagulation system by messing up the pathways. It's a long cascade we call the clotting cascade, and vitamin K is very intimately involved in that, and this antagonizes the vitamin K, and the next thing you know, your bleeding potential goes sky high. And that's one of the major problems we saw with Coumadin, is a lot of people had bleeding, you know, they had bleeding through their kidneys, or they would have gastrointestinal bleeding, or they would vomit blood, or they would bleed in their head and die. I mean, that's what made Coumadin so treacherous. The other drugs have that problem too, but not nearly to the level, the newer ones. Well, it's called a vitamin K antagonist. Well, Bradyfalcum is pretty much the same thing, except more so. It's like Coumadin on steroids. And a dose of that, it was used to kill rats and stuff. But a dose of that, what it does basically is interferes with clotting of the blood, and the victim will at some point, at some time, bleed to death. They will have bleeding out the nose and around their eyes, into internal organs, gastrointestinal bleeding, either vomiting or bloody diarrhea, through the urinary tract where they pass urine blood through the urine, and they can bleed internally in the abdomen and their chest, and I mean, it's horrible, and it's a terrible way to die. Now I'll talk about one of my favorite ones, tetrodotoxin, or TTX. Now this is a fantastic poison, and you can get it. We'll talk about that. But it comes from the puffer fish, and it's also called the trigger fish or the porcupine fish. It's got all kinds of things, but tetrodotoxin is a neurotoxin again. It's also found in things like the blue-ringed octopus and certain newts and some snails and things like that. And you probably remember the best James Bond movie ever from Russia with Love with Rosa Klebb, who tried to kick James with her knife blades in the toes of her shoes, and she apparently had the poison from the blue-ringed octopus on that, which would have killed James instantly, but of course you can't kill James Bond. But tetrodotoxin can kill you. It's found, like I said, in the puffer fish, so it's part of the Japanese delicacy known as fugu or fuyu. It's F-U-G-U. I'm not sure how it's pronounced, but it's a delicacy. And the chefs that prepare that have to be especially trained and licensed. And the key is, when you prepare the fish and remove the internal organs where a lot of the toxin is, you gotta do it just right. And it's a process. I think I remember reading it takes a day or two to even do it. But you gotta get it just right so that just a little bit of the toxin is left in the flesh. This way, when the person eats it, they get that warm, fuzzy, tingly feeling. Because why? Because they're a little bit poisoned. They're not deadly poisoned. They're a little bit poisoned. So they start getting the side effects of it. Well, you can see if the chef is not well trained, does not have a lot of experience, or has a bad day, you can end up killing the customer. And every year or so, you hear about several people dying in a restaurant from a bad dish in Japan, and it happens. And so where can you get this? Well, interestingly, this is also called zombie powder. And I know that sounds goofy, but believe me, it's real. And I had actually had a patient many years ago. We'll call him Jim because, well, that was his name. But he lived in Haiti, which is where voodoo is big. And they would make zombies there. They would put a powder in their shoes, basically. They'd put a little bit of the powder in their shoes. The neurotoxin, they would go out. They would be unconscious for a half a day, a day, 2 days, 3 days. Because what this does is it slows everything. Your blood pressure drops. Your breathing drops. The level of oxygen in the blood drops. Heart rates and blood pressures can go very low. And in fact, the person often looks like they're dead. So they take them out and put them in a field, cover them with a few leaves, and come back 12 to 24 hours later and get them and wake them up and let the toxin wear off. And now they basically have anoxic encephalopathy, which is brain damage from low oxygen. And this tends to harm the frontal lobe more than anywhere else. So it's kind of like having a frontal lobotomy. Think about Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which is the mechanical version of that. But now the people are very flat affect. They're very easygoing. They're very easy to manipulate. So they become great field workers. And that's where zombies came from. It's not just the movies, you know, and the zombie apocalypse. This is real. Well, Jim had a truck axle factory that Baby Doc Duvalier of the great Duvalier family, his father was bad, Baby Doc was worse, Papa Doc and Baby Doc was worse. And he had this paramilitary group that protecting him called the Tantan Maku. And they basically came in the Jim's place and powdered his shoes one night, and he gets up the next morning, slips on his slippers, and he goes and he sits to have breakfast, and the next thing he knows, he wakes up a couple of days later in a 400-year-old prison, laying on a mat with a rat gnawing on his toe. Well, it took several weeks for the State Department to get him out of Haiti, needless to say. Baby Doc got his axle company, and Jim ended up in the U.S. He was never the same again. I saw him many years later. And his thought processes, his ability to do things were terrible. Really, really nice guy. And interesting, a great artist, a pen and ink artist. He gave me several of his pieces he had worked on. He showed me a whole portfolio where he drew the pictures of what he remembered about what happened to him in Haiti. Well, you can get this in the Algiers area of New Orleans. If you go down to New Orleans and walk along the riverfront and look across the river, that's Algiers. Voodoo is throughout that area of the country. They're not saying anything bad about voodoo. It's a Christian-based religion. It's just a little odd. But they use zombie powder, if you will, TTX, in some of their rituals and stuff. At least some of them do. So you can find it there. It's a fascinating toxin. And again, like I said, there's a link to it. Another interesting one in the same family is batrachotoxin. And this comes from certain frogs. And when you hear about the South Americans, you know, that using poison darts, is probably from this. In fact, I think some of the poisonous frogs are in the dart family, as it were. Now, it is also a neurotoxin, and it can cause a lot of this stuff also the same way as I talked about with TTX. But it also seems to have a very strong effect on the heart muscle. It's similar to digoxin, which comes from the foxglove, which is a medical drug that's been around forever, but it is also a deadly toxin. It's one of those things where a little bit will make you better and a little more will make you sick and a little more will kill you, like most drugs. But it'll cause cardiac arrhythmias, particularly the rapid ones like ventricular fibrillation and ventricular tachycardia, which can kill you. So this one might be harder to come by, but it's something to look into and pay attention to. In the plant world, let's talk a little bit about mushrooms. Now, the Amanita family is totally different than the psychedelic family, okay? Now, the magic mushrooms that Grace Slick and the Jefferson Airplane sang about and everybody else did, and it seemed like everybody in the 60s and 70s took for some reason. It was kind of like the poor man's LSD back then, and then LSD kind of took over. But the psilocybin mushrooms, those are the magic mushrooms that have hallucinogenic effects. This is a different animal. These are the death cap mushrooms. Now, you read about this from time to time where people go out in the forest to forage for mushrooms, and they bring them in and they cook them up and they think, isn't this great? You know, we went shopping in the forest. Well, you better know what you're doing, because if you pick up the wrong ones and you don't identify them what they were, you get this toxin called amatoxin, and it lives in these mushrooms. And here's what makes it treacherous. It goes, once you swallow it and it gets into the system, you might get sick 12 hours later just for a little while. You might get nauseated. You might feel like you got food poisoning, but then it passes and you feel better. And you say, oh, okay, so I don't have to go to the doctor or the emergency room. It's just something I ate. And then 24 hours later, so 36 to 48 hours after ingesting it, now you get sick again. And this time you get really sick. Well, here's the problem. The toxin is doing its damage to the liver the entire time. It just has this diphasic, if you will, response that you get bad, you get better, then you get bad again. And by the time most people seek medical attention, it's 2 or 3 days later and the damage is done. Their liver is wiped out. And that's what makes death cap mushrooms so dangerous. So read about this one, think about this one. A couple of other plants will end on this. One, of course, is deadly nightshade or belladonna. Now, this is fascinating. It's been around a long, 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 long time. And it seems that the berries are the most toxic part, but so are the leaves. In fact, almost any of it. It includes toxins like atropine and scopolamine. And what they do is many things. In the neurologic system, they can cause confusion and disorientation and even psychotic behavior because of the way this drug acts on the brain and your perceptions of stuff. And so people have gone, you know, looked insane and out of their minds when they're on belladonna. It can cause hallucinations. It can also lead to seizures and death and all of that kind of stuff. Cardiac-wise, it can cause the heart to basically change its rhythm to the point that it, like I said, it has a anticholinergic effect, so it makes the heart race and run, and arrhythmias can appear, and the person can collapse and die, particularly someone who has underlying heart disease. It also causes dilated pupils. We called in medical school, we learned that atropine poisoning, which is what this is, makes you blind as a bat, red as a beet, dry as a bone, and mad as a hatter, because it causes a flushing of the face, a dilatation of the pupils so that you can't see, and it can cause the side effects of all of those things. And that's what happens when you ingest atropine, or in this case, deadly nightshade. It's interesting that it used to be used, and I think one of the ways it got its name is that Cleopatra and maybe even people before her would put a little drop in their eye because it dilated up their pupils and made them sexier, as it were. And so Bella Donna means beautiful woman. So it's had those cosmetic uses, but it's also deadly. It's very easy to come by because literally you can probably go out in your backyard, and if not, you can go to your plant store. I've often said that, you know, if you want a poison, don't go to the pharmacy, go to your local nursery. Oleander. Oleander's been around a long time, and oleander is an awful poison, but and it is everywhere, particularly out in California. It used to grow along the freeways a lot. I don't see so much of it anymore. I had several shrubs in my yard. We got rid of all of them. But oleander, you know, has been the subject of books and movies and all of that, so it's easy. You know how oleander works. Again, it is a plant poison, and the ingestion of it can lead to gastrointestinal symptoms, of course. It can also, since it has an effect like digitalis, foxglove, like I talked about before, it can cause deadly cardiac arrhythmias, and the person can collapse and die. So think about that while you're plotting your story and trying to come up with your perfect poison. Well, we've talked about quite a few of them here, and trust me, there are a whole lot more out there. But whether if you want to use, you know, one of the nerve gases or polonium, or you want to use a plant-based one or tetrodotoxin or cyanide or strychnine, botulism, any of these things, I hope this has kind of helped you think about how do I want to plot my next story? How can I use the poisoning and make it a little bit unusual? Now, as I said, there is links to all of these toxins and some other things on my website and my blog. When this is posted, they'll go up at the same time, so you can click over there and see those. And so I also have to add that this is a copyrighted show from Authors on the Air. And this has been D.P. Lyle. So until next time, I'll see you on Criminal Mischief, the art and science of crime fiction. I'll see you down the road.